Fine Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Welcome to a Sunday morning in December on the Gulf Coast. Near about the shortest day of the year, the longest night. It's one of the cool things about this time of year. I guess it's the long night. Is it the long night that makes everything seem so mysterious at this time of year? So, we got to expect the normal things to suddenly do abnormal things. Well, that's an interesting thing at Christmas for everybody. It's an interesting thing for this time of year and the holidays. It's been celebrated that way for a long time. Let me talk to you briefly, though, about how you find the abnormal in the normal things. That suddenly the normal things seem really special. You know, here's the issue, and I people talk about the commercialism of Christmas. I think that's missing the point. I think it's not just that we have to feel like we have to spend money to do Christmas, and that we have to spend a lot of it. That's what we believe in the United States. It's that we have to get our Christmas from other places. We have to go way out of field to get our Christmas. We have to go, you know, we have to import our Christmas from China. We have to get it boxed in and from China and brought in by UPS, and suddenly that's the only way to make Christmas magic. Let's work out of Christmas. Let's work these holidays. Let's make this holiday about where we are. Hanukkah, Christmas, New Year's. Let's make it about where we are, about our experience. Let's go out in the yard. We've talked about it before. And I've been thinking about, you know, how much of the holidays is out in the yard, out in the yard around us, out in the world around us. Just the things we ignore most of the year. We ignore them. But at this time of year, when the nights are so long and everything seems so mysterious, and that moon, boy, that liquid, watery moon is out there every night looking down on you for a long time. When everything is so mysterious this time of year, and that light is the way it is this time of year, and there's usually a little bit of a fog or mist, go out in the yard and tell me what you see, because those things that are so, that we just ignore most of the year, we don't even think about most of the year unless we want to do something to them, get rid of them, suddenly they take on a new meaning this time of year. We talked about the mistletoe. It's fun because, listen, if you do nothing else, just go out, walk up and down your street and look for the mistletoe. There's a chance that it may be higher than you can reach, but there's also a very good chance that the mistletoe is going to be growing on your street, in your yard, within reach of your hand. Take a little pair of clippers. Take a long-handled pair of loppers. See if you can't find some mistletoe. You know what the mistletoe looks like this time of year? Here's the way to look for it. Look for the water oak. Look for a laurel oak. Look for a tree that has mostly lost its leaves. You're not going to find it in a live oak. You won't find it in a live oak. You won't find it in a pine. But you're going to find it in a lot of other trees, in hackberries and maples and all of these other grow-fast, not-die-young trees. They don't have much of an immune system, and there's a bunch of them out there. And it's everywhere, and it's these little globular clumps of green that have this really beautiful, beautiful green. It looks like a little bush growing on its own inside the tree. Just take a little piece of that mistletoe and bring it back with you. It ain't going to hurt you. It isn't going to hurt the dogs. We'll come back to that. We'll talk about that in our next hour, about your fear of poisonous things. It's ridiculous. Not at Christmas. Don't worry about the poinsettias. Don't worry about the mistletoe. It isn't going to hurt you. It isn't going to hurt you at all. And just bring a little bit back. Hang it up. You know, you don't have to kiss somebody else. That's not what the mistletoe's about. The mistletoe is about saying, boy, I have made a connection with the world around me. It's a beautiful connection. This little common thing that's everywhere is special this time of year. It'll be special to other people. They're going to look at that mistletoe hanging there, and they're going to say, where did you find that? And you're going to say, you know, it's out there all around us. We just had to look for it. Look for the mistletoe. Mistletoe's a big thing. You know, there's so many other great things this time of year. Jackson Vine. I got to talk about Jackson Vine because for 364 days of the year, I'm getting calls about Jackson Vine. You call it Smilax. There are many kinds of Smilax. You don't call it Smilax. You call it that thorny vine that has the thorns all over it that grows from a big tuber in the ground, and you cuss it and curse it all year long. There's one called Smilax. There's one Smilax called Jackson Vine, and it has been used as Christmas decoration. In fact, during the teens and 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s, people in the South actually went out and trimmed a Jackson Vine, the vine that you curse, and sent it up north as Christmas decorations. People used it because, you know, people up north feel like they got to get their Christmas decorations from someplace else. That's the way we are. So we actually trimmed it, sent it up north. It was used commonly in the South as Christmas decorations on doors. We've forgotten about it completely. All we know how to do is curse it. Jackson Vine, it kind of smiles. Here's how you find Jackson Vine. You know those vines that have the big tubers, and they're very thorny. One is thorny for about the first 3 or 4 feet, and then the rest of the vine has no thorns on it whatsoever. It has these beautiful leaves that are shaped like a lance, you know, like a lance head. Just a beautiful little lance head, dark green, and with beautiful colors, beautiful dark green colors. If you cut that vine, cut it above where the thorns are, just be about the first 6 feet, there'll be thorns. Above that, there'll be no thorns. And you make a wreath out of it, it'll be the most beautiful wreath you ever made. You can use it to make a swag above your door. It's really cool. Use it to make a swag around your mantle on your fireplace. It's one of the most beautiful Christmas decorations you could ever find. And it's right there in your yard. It's the thing you cuss all year long, and suddenly it's something to celebrate. I'll tell you something else. You can actually eat it in April, but we'll talk about that. It's really delicious. Rosemary. Everybody's got rosemary in the yard. You know, so many people now have rosemary in the yard. Cut some rosemary sprigs. Bring them in. It just, the fragrance that it brings to the house is just miraculous. Bring a little bit of that rosemary in. Muscadine vines. There are muscadines everywhere. It's just amazing. There are muscadines in my yard in Midtown Mobile. How in the world there are muscadines in the middle of a developed area like Midtown Mobile? I don't know. But there's muscadine vines everywhere. Cut some muscadines. They make beautiful wreaths. The vines do this time of year. Just another great thing. Cedar. And if you got some cedar in the yard, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful green. But you know what I love is that fragrance of cedar. We've got an artificial tree now. It's probably made in China. Just cut some of that cedar and bring it inside. Bring it inside. I know there are some people who may not like the fragrance of cedar, but most of us do. Most of us appreciate it. And most of us can tolerate it. Bring some cedar inside. It's a really great, great way to do that. Hollies. You know, can I just talk to you about hollies? Hollies grow wild here. We have as many hollies. I think Europe has one species of holly, maybe two species of holly, and they celebrate it. Make it part of their decorations. Here in the Southeast, lost count. Maybe 10, 11, 12 species of hollies. There are at least a dozen. There are hollies that are evergreen, that have evergreen leaves, that are classic. The American holly, the holly we call American holly, it grows wild all over the place, has beautiful red berries. There's male and female. Some of the males don't have the berries. The females do. It's a beautiful thing to collect, but there are also these other beautiful hollies we never talk about that are part of our lives down here in the South, the deciduous hollies. If you live near a swamp, if you live on the edge of a swamp, I guarantee you, if you go in that swamp right now, and it's a big nice swamp almost certainly has these beautiful red berries just hanging. It's almost like they're suspended in midair because the branches don't have any leaves on them anymore. But the branches are wreathed with these red berries, brilliant red berries. You can cut those and bring them inside. They're beautiful. It's a great thing to do. Just the little common things, the common things we forget about. I got more to talk about. We got more good plants to find in your yard. Let's come back and talk a little bit about them. Give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Boy, there's lots of stuff to talk about. Lots of stuff that we sort of think is, you know, we ignore it the rest of the year, and then suddenly this time of year, it can become very special. You just got to look for it. You got to look for that mistletoe. You got to look the longleaf pine boughs. They're all around many of our yards. We tend to ignore what a special tree longleaf is. This is a great time to celebrate it. And, you know, if the only way you can celebrate longleaf pine is to go out and trim a few branches, They're very distinctive. They have those branches that are as thick as your thumb. There are no twigs on a longleaf. It's just the branches. They're almost as thick as your thumb when they end. And then there's this big spray of leaves that's as long as the leaves of any pine. They can be 2 or 3 feet long in some cases. Most of the time, they're around 18 inches. And they make these beautiful sprays, and they make beautiful wreaths and beautiful Christmas decorations. Keevil Larson and his daughter turned me on to this. They're just incredibly beautiful Christmas decorations for this time of year. Another great thing to look for in our yard. That's what we're going to do today. We're going to be thinking about those things, satsumas, camellias, tea olives. Taxman, what are you finding in your yard?
Hey, Bill.
Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Talking about hollies?
Yes, sir.
I got plenty of hollies and also nandita and magnolia leaves and Japanese yews. They make great, great wreaths.
Yeah.
Boy, now, let me say something here. Talking about hollies, Mr. Tom Dodd was the holly man.
He was.
He brought many, many varieties into this country. He'd take trips to Japan just to see the hollies. And he did an outstanding job. Now, something else. In today's land yap, The Beginning of Mobile's Nursery Industry by Martin Van de Geisen. He talks about Rubel, the Dodds, the Smiths, and the Swatters. It's a great, great article, and he's going to have another one next month. But let me say this. I've known Mr. Rubel, have personal correspondence with him, and Mr. Smith and Mr. Dodd had personal correspondence with him, but this is a great article, and just go out there and make those decorations because you got everything you need right in your own yard, and if it's not in your yard, it's in your neighborhood. So borrow some from a neighbor.
That's right.
All right, we'll see
those
you later,
are
Bill.
Yeah, thank you. Those are great names to hear. Mr. Dodd, can I tell you about Mr. Dodd? One time, Tom Dodd was famous. Bill Dodd's famous too, and all of the Dodds have done a great job of contributing to the nursery industry. Their dad was very important as well. It's another generation, and then Tom Dodd III continued that. But let me tell you what Mr. Tom Dodd would do. Mr. Tom Dodd was trying to develop great hollies. One of the things he would do, because he had so many hollies out in his field, and he knew they would cross-pollinate, and he knew he was going to get a different holly than anybody had ever seen before, how is he going to collect those seeds? And holly seeds don't germinate really well unless they've been through a bird's gut. It's kind of a funny thing. And so you could wait a long time for a holly seed to germinate unless a bird has eaten it. And that's kind of an important lesson about why hollies are colored the way they are. They're red and gold to an orange to attract the birds. But listen, here's the funny part. Mr. Dodd would sit beneath the rain gutter on his office and collect the seeds that came out when the birds sat on the gutter and pooped. I'm sorry I said that word. But that's what happened. And the seeds came out, and he would collect them and then plant them and sow them out, and found some really great hollies that way. In fact, I think some of the really famous ones were found that way. Great story about Mr. Dodd. I'm so glad Martin's writing about these folks, John Allen Smith and John Giordano and the other people, the Sawatas and so many others who were so important in the nursery industry. It's great to hear he's doing that today. Chris in Saraland sent me a text. He's got a flower bed full of a particular plant that we curse most of the year. Here's a good time of year to think about that plant and think about how special it is. It's called rattlesnake weed. Rattlesnake weed. It's Stachys floridana. It's actually a native plant. It's a member of the mint family, Chris. A member of the mint family. And it's related to a plant that in France, in fact, it's just almost identical to a plant in France that is considered a food delicacy. Stachys croon, I think, is how you would say it roughly in French. It's a very popular dish there, and it's these beautiful little tubers that are on those plants. They won't form until April. That's one way you could think about it. But here's another thing. Chris figured out that these plants only come up this time of year. It pops up in the fall and winter. If you don't like having this beautiful French food delicacy in your flower beds, and you don't want to harvest the roots in April and May when they're at their peak, March, April, and May, you weed them now. If you wait until March, April, and May, they will have already formed those tubers, and no matter what you do to the top, they're going to come right back. If you weed them now before they form the tubers, you'll eliminate them. You won't get to eat the tubers. but there it is. It's a beautiful plant. It's this great plant for our gardens and really quite delicious. A lot of us enjoy eating them. They're really quite delicious. Got another caller. Charlie, I'm listening.
Yeah, Rusty.
Rusty, yes, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Merry Christmas, Bill.
Merry Christmas to you.
I've managed to clear out around my bayou most of the stuff that you told me, like 60 popcorn trees from last year, cutting out a few more water oaks. But I planted a couple of bald cypress. I have the fantails, the red bays, the hollies, the elder bog. Is there anything else I could plant that would be helpful for this area?
Well, there's so many great plants that grow in swamps. In terms of hollies, by the way, there are three types of hollies that grow in bogs and around here, and they're all very interesting. One is the deciduous, the Ilex decidua, the deciduous holly. There's also Ilex verticillata, which also loses its leaves. It's called winterberry, and it's really common in swamps. And there's another holly called Ilex myrtifolia, which has evergreen leaves, which grows on the edges of blackwater swamps and should do just fine. It has tiny little evergreen leaves. The leaves are like little tiny, not as big as your little fingernail. Little tiny leaves just covered in red berries this time of year. They can be really beautiful.
Oh, yeah. I have plenty of those.
Yep, and then there's the Alabama Dahoon holly, which is a beautiful holly with much longer leaves, really cool. All of these are growing around swamps. Buttonbush, have you seen buttonbush?
I did. I sent you a picture of that last year.
That's right. And so Buttonbush is another really fun shrub for those areas. If you live, it's a little different if you live in a blackwater swamp than if you live in a, and so are you well off the river, or are you close to the river?
I'm very close. Right to my north is where the Pascagoula and the Escatawba come together.
Yeah. So you probably, particularly if you live in a backwater that's more like, it's going to be a little harder to judge, but I think you probably could do a whole lot of blackwater plants, depending on the soil there. And so there's really some wonderful plants like, there's all sorts of ericaceous plants like the native swamp azaleas. Have you seen those around where you are?
I have not seen any azaleas.
So there are two azaleas that would be growing, wild azaleas. We call them honeysuckles, honeysuckle azaleas. They're not the vines. That they came along later. They're from Japan. those things we call sweet honeysuckle vines, and we name them for the same. For the azalea that used to grow in our woods so commonly.
I have the pink ones.
So there are orange ones on the Pascagoula, and the Escatawpa are famous for their orange azaleas, and they bloom in spring. The other azalea that blooms commonly along the Pascagoula and Escatawpa is the grandma called hummock sweet azalea. The hummock azalea, the hammock azalea, there are two varieties of it, and both varieties probably, or two species, I think, growing. But they bloom in summer. They bloom from starting in May, June, July. Some will bloom as late as August, and some maybe even in September. But they're really beautiful, very fragrant, very nice, and they're really great to have in a little bayou area like that. I'm trying to think if, you know, usually you can find those at the Botanical Gardens plant sales, one or both of those as a species, and the species tend to do a little better and are a lot more interesting than the hybrids that we've created from those species.
I'll stretch.
For those kind of things. So that's some ideas. Boy, I could go on and on. Does that help, though?
That helps a great deal, Bill. Yeah. Well, you and y'all have a happy holiday and Merry Christmas.
All right, good. You too. Hey, we got to take a break. We'll be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. You know, we've had a fun time talking about decorations this morning. Hal Tippins, thanks, Hal, for calling in. It's good to hear from you as always. Hal down in downtown Dog River says, don't forget Florida anise, Elysium. And so I'm not sure why Hal told us not to forget it, but there's a couple of reasons we don't want to forget it. We don't want to forget it, Rusty, for the areas. It can be a great plant, not in the swamp, but on the edge of the swamp, just coming out of the swamp on those moist slopes as they sort of slope down into the swamp. Florida anise can be really beautiful in those places, and it's one of the world's oldest. It's a group of plants that are the world's oldest, among the world's oldest flowering plants. They're very, very old. They have these beautiful flowers in April, incredibly beautiful, weird looking flowers. It's really kind of hard to describe them. They're a deep maroon red. Really a gorgeous deep maroon red, and with a very funny center, and these little red petals, mini red petals spreading off, thin red petals, but very showy, and with these big evergreen leaves. So they're great in the landscape. They're also beautiful. You know, I'm wondering if they would make great Christmas decorations. They may. I don't know how they would hold up if you were to cut them and bring them inside, but the fragrance of that Florida anise is unbelievable. The leaves have an unbelievable fragrance, and very oily. They have a very oily fragrance that you'll get it on your hands. Don't if you taste it, it's not a pleasant taste. It's very strong taste, but it's a very interesting plant. Tax Man and I are having a great time, and as are a lot of people, thinking about what are the great Christmas decorations we could use out of our yard. What are the great holiday decorations? And Taxman, we agree that holly's great. Magnolia leaves. I didn't even get to the magnolia leaves, but of course magnolia leaves are great this time of year. The evergreen magnolias are beautiful. Nandina's yews, if you've got a yew. We have Podocarpus, which is Japanese. We call Podocarpus is a kind of a Japanese yew. It's beautiful, and a lot of people have that. And you're right. It just makes a great decoration, Taxman. Thanks for that. Thanks for helping us think about those things. Kind of fun to think about all the different plants that can be used in the yard. Chris, it's even fun to think about that wonderful weed that you've got that you have a flower bed full of. And so you have a choice. I tell people this time of year, they have a choice. Rattlesnake weed is this beautiful native mint. We call it rattlesnake weed because it has these little white tubers underground. The tubers don't form until February, March, April, and May. But the leaves come up during winter when they develop all their energy. And so you can leave it in place if it's in a good place in your yard, if it's not too close to the house. I wouldn't eat things because of all the paint chips and everything that comes off the house. I wouldn't eat things that grow right next to the house within that first 3 feet. But if they're in flower beds out in the yard, you can leave them. And you know what you can do? You can kind of pull them up in March, April, and May. They're really beautiful. The beautiful white tubers. It's just like you can eat them fresh. Chop them, eat them fresh in salads. They're really delicious. It's like a sweet turnip with a milky taste. A very milky. It's almost like cream and turnips together. It's a very distinctive flavor. I really like it. It's light. It's light. You almost can't. It almost destroys it if you cook it. But it's a fun thing to do. On the other hand, if you just don't like rattlesnake weed, you don't care about eating things, you don't like having fun. If you don't like having fun, well, you can go out. You know what you can do? You can pull it up in your beds this time of year, because if you pull it now, it won't form those tubers, and you'll just about eliminate it. The reason people have a problem with rattlesnake weed is that they wait until March and April and May when the tubers have already formed, and then they try to pull it out of the beds. Don't even worry about pulling the roots this time of year, because just pull that green off. Do it a couple of times this winter, and there'll hardly be any left, because it will have used all of its energy trying to produce those green stalks. You pull the green stalks, there's nothing left. That's how easy it is to think about plants, to understand plants. Those plants take advantage of us. They think we love them because we let them grow during the time of year when they like to grow best, which is winter. Greg, it's good to hear from you, good to see your gardens looking great. A lot of good-looking gardens, and some nice fishing going on, too, isn't it? Tara, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, I got a couple of native kind of decorative, you know, options. The first is saw palmetto. The leaves can be clipped with a pair of kitchen shears to any kind of a shape you want, and, of course, you can spray paint them if you want to.
That's right.
And I got a question with this one, is sassafras. I have the most wonderful bag of sassafras roots that were dug up by someone who was trying to literally get rid of them because they were the way he put it was, there are hundreds out there, you know. But the fragrance is so, I'm just enchanted by it. I guess not everybody likes root beer, but it just smells so good to me, and it's interesting looking. And my question regarding it is the locally grown wild stuff, I'm assuming this is wild, since he didn't plant it, is it toxic in any way?
Okay, so a lot of questions about toxicity with a lot of plants, but no, not really. The sassafras has been used, when you talk about when we sing filet gumbo, we talk about filet powder.
Right, the leaves. My
using
grandfather
gumbo.
Used to gather the leaves again and powder them to make his own.
Filet was made from one of two related plants. It was either made from red bay, or it was made from sassafras, or both. And there were filet powders made from red bay and filet powders made from sassafras. And it was commonly used by the Choctaws as part of their culture, and we adopted it later, and used it to thicken gumbos. And so sassafras leaves are still used to thicken gumbos. So they're really great. You know, the fragrance of sassafras, and they are wild. They grow wild. They grow wild in Louisiana. We have introduced a disease, being the thoughtful people that we are. We have introduced a disease which is now destroying red bays and may destroy sassafras. We don't know how it's going to affect sassafras, but we're probably not going to see big trees of sassafras anymore in the South, or maybe anywhere in the country. They're mostly going to be shrubs because of this disease, and we'll probably see fewer of the shrubs. But it still makes a very good spice. The fragrance, and I use the leaves. I wrap when I grill things. I take those leaves of sassafras, which are very distinctive. I take the leaves and I actually wrap stuff. So if I'm taking if I'm cooking fish or pork or chicken, and the leaves are fresh during the summer and into the during the growing season, I'll wrap it with those sassafras leaves. It gives it a wonderful flavor. The sassafras leaves get a little bit toasty on the grill. It gives them a special flavor, kind of imparts a special flavor. So they're really great. The stems smell like, if you chew on the stems, which I always do in the woods, it has a lemony kind of flavor. It's not quite root beer. It's almost lemony. The roots, however, are used to make a kind of a root beer like thing. And so a lot of times the roots are extracted. The saffron is extracted from the roots. There is out there, and I have to say, there's an old story that if you were to drink sassafras tea every day, that it could be bad for you. And I don't know. I don't drink sassafras tea every day. I don't recommend people drink sassafras tea every day. But at very, very, very high doses, in one experiment, at very high doses, there was evidence that saffron can be harmful. Not so much toxic as it can alter things. Now, the fact of the matter is, nobody is going to eat saffron at those levels. The same thing can be said for nutmeg. Nutmeg has the same sort of thing. If you were to eat nutmeg every day in large quantities, it may be that over time you would cause problems. To put that in perspective, eating processed meats is far more dangerous.
I mean, I would engage to a guy who was allergic to green things.
Yeah. So, anyway, there's no immediate toxicity. It's been eaten for years, and it's a cool kind of thing, sassafras.
Thank you so much.
Welcome. Hey, Charlie, are there any other callers?
Yeah, Tommy Lee.
Tommy Lee, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, I love your show. I'm here in the backyard looking at the bird sanctuary in my backyard. And I got a question. There's a stand of sea oats down at the at the yacht basin at the Grand Hotel. And I go down there, you know, frequently to just, you know, park and watch the water and watch the seabirds and, you know, the yachts coming in and out. And I was wondering, I went down there recently to try to harvest some sea oats because I'm going to transplant them along the beach further up toward the Fairhope Pier. And what is the optimal time? Because when I got there, there were no seeds on the sea oats. There were, you know, they'd already dropped their burden.
Yeah. So yeah, that's always a problem for a lot of things. You know, there's a lot of wild rice, for example, in the Delta. Tons of wild rice, just like pretty much like the wild rice you buy at the grocery store, except that the wild rice you buy at the grocery store comes from Minnesota. But we have a lot of it in the Delta. But people have a hard time harvesting because of something called shattering. Wild plants aren't really set up their seeds to make it easy for people to harvest because that's not really on their agenda. So we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about how that works when we get through with this little break that's coming up. We'll be right back.
To Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Go, Bill. Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Get a lot of interesting questions. Is Tommy Lee still online, Charlie? Hey. Charlie, hello?
Here's Tommy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about CO.
Yeah, so Tommy, here's the interesting problem. Here's the interesting problem. When with these plants that shatter, where the seed heads shatter very easily, if you're going to collect the seed, you sometimes have to bag them. Literally bag them. It's probably not good to use clear plastic. I actually use, when I'm trying to bag seeds, I get those little packets that they have you ever seen those little packets that they collect that they have rice in for weddings? You ever seen those little? It's kind of like a mesh with some rice in there, and you throw it for weddings.
Okay.
It's a little mesh. I can't remember what you call that kind of fabric. I should remember, but I don't. And it breathes a little bit, but it keeps the seeds from falling through. And I'll actually tie that around a plant whose seeds I want to collect if I'm afraid those seeds are going to shatter. And so that's an easy way to do it. The problem is that plants are going to, the seeds are going to mature at different times, even on the same head. So you'll lose, you know, that's the problem. And that makes it a whole lot easier to collect seeds. Now, I'm curious, how tall are the sea oats that you see at Point Clear there at the Grand? Are they really tall?
They're 5 foot tall.
5 foot tall. Okay, so they probably are sea oats. It's not a place where I would think sea oats growing natively. I guess they've probably been planted there. And are probably doing really well. I guess they're doing okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but good. I think you're going to have to bag them to be really sure.
Okay.
Are you going to have to check them every day?
I've got another question for you.
Yeah.
Now, this one is going to blow your mind. Up in Silver Hill, a few years ago, I saw the butt end of what appeared to be a war canoe.
Wow.
I was wondering It was a war canoe of from the American Indians.
Yeah, and what happened to it?
I don't know. I'd like to find out. But I was wondering, what kind of tree would they have done a dugout, you know, of the size? Because this thing was like 6 foot long and at least 3 foot deep, but it was either one end or the other of what I think was an old canoe.
Yeah, well, and it could well be, and those things are very valuable historically in helping us to understand those cultures, because these were people, the original people of Alabama. They were people who loved the water and who used the water a lot, and they had some really neat canoes. Mostly, I think we usually describe them being made out of cypress, and that makes a lot of sense. I think that I also suspect they were made out of what we now call, what local folks call juniper, which is better understood as the common name of white cedar, and the Gulf Coast white cedar, which is a very specific kind of white cedar. I think they were probably also made out of that. They were the process for making those canoes is very interesting. Apparently, you would find a log that was in sort of the right shape, and then you would begin burning out the interior. You would actually create a fire that would begin to burn out that interior and burn out the interior wood until you got your shape. You would burn it down into layers. You'd put the fire out before it consumed the whole wood, of course. You'd have a sort of a control fire that would begin to shape it. And that's how they would make those canoes. But they're very interesting, very beautiful. Yeah.
And I just thought, you know, if I put the word out there, I noticed that it disappeared from the parking lot in Silver Hill a couple of years ago, and I was wondering what happened to it. I'm sure somebody out there knows the history of what happened to that artifact.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know. You know, it's there are collectors and lots of other things that would take those. It really would be nice if we knew more about how, if we could study those a little better. But no, I don't know the answer to that story. But well, boy, those canoes are really interesting. Yeah.
But I thought I'd, you know, this is one place, you know, well, I thank you, you know, for the information. And I love your show, by the way.
Great. Thank you. All right. You too. Yeah. So, yeah, so it's interesting. I there were lots of woods that were probably used at one time or another to make canoes. I think cypress was most commonly used here. I also wonder if magnolia wouldn't have made a pretty good canoe wood. It wouldn't have lasted forever, but it would have been a little easier to build, and it would have floated probably pretty well. Rattlesnake weed. Taxman says he grows his rattlesnake weed in hanging baskets. That's good. I like that, Taxman. You know, a lot of people, it's one of these things that a lot of people, so many of these weeds that we curse, if you look at them at the right time of year, you find that they can be useful. And I'm not saying, I mean, they're weeds that I pull all the time. Weeds take advantage of our inattention. Weeds have turned out to be smarter than we are. And most of the plants that we call weeds are weeds that are plants that think, boy, these humans sure do love us. Because, boy, they've created perfect conditions for us to grow. And they're growing there, not because they despise you, but because they think, boy, this is a great person to be around. He really loves me. He does everything just right for me. And that's why those weeds grow so well for you. It's a good way to think about weeds. It's a much better way of thinking about weeds than we normally do as some kind of enemy, because when we think of them as enemies, we forget the fact that those weeds are there because we're there. That's the honest to goodness truth. There you go. So we've been talking about great things to do for Christmas, finding your way through your yard, looking for things that grow there, celebrating the mystery of this holiday by finding something really exceptional and things that are around us all the time. we ignore, that we sometimes despise. Rattlesnake weed's a great thing. Jackson vine is a wonderful thing. Ignoring mistletoe, which is all around us. Just what a shame. What a shame. You know, I think maybe Christmas decorations along the Gulf Coast might even include Spanish moss. There'd be no reason not to do that. It would give it a special look, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it say something about where we are? Something special about Spanish moss? Hey, we're going to talk about, we're going to come back, we're going to talk about all of these really cool plants and about how to celebrate the holidays when we come back. We're also going to talk a little bit about which I always have to deal with this time of year. Why is it that we are so convinced that we're going to die from something during the holidays? So we're going to die from our poinsettias. We're going to die from mistletoe. We're going to die from whatever it is, sassafras or whatever else it is. We're going to, you know, it's I can't quite explain that. Can't quite explain that, why it is that we're so fearful of things. We're going to die from holly berries. We're not going to die from those things. We're going to talk about those myths when we come back and talk a little bit more about your garden. So feel free to give us a call. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. Hey, it's great to hear from you folks. Great to hear from you, David. Great to hear from you, Greg. And Tax Man. And we're going to be back